السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. أعوذ بالله السميع العليم من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين، حبيبي إله العالمين أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد، وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المنتجبين. قال الله في كتابه الحكيم: بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها الذين آمنوا إن جاءكم فاسق بنبأ فتبينوا أن تصيبوا قوما بجهالة فتصبحوا على ما فعلتم نادمين. صدق الله العلي العظيم. وصلوا على محمد وآل محمد. The 15th of Ramadan is the day in which we celebrate the birthday of the second Imam of the school of Ahlul Bayt, Al-Imam Al-Hasan Al-Mujtaba alayhi salam. And in line with the theme of the month, and that is great woman of the history of Islam, I thought I'd mention something that some of you may be familiar with, but I wanted to mention the story of the woman in the life of Al-Imam Al-Hasan alayhi salam. And some of you may be familiar with this, that if you refer to historical accounts, what some historians had written was that Imam al-Hasan alayhi salam, and of course this is wrong, but I want to bring this to light just to show the character of the Imam in light of all of what was said, that he was a man that was a habitual divorcer, meaning that he would marry and divorce and marry and divorce, and that cycle continued. And just to give an example, I don't want to retell the entire story because I've mentioned this before, but one of the historians that tells the story is Al-Mada'ini. And Al-Mada'ini was a historian that lived during the time of the Abbasid era. And if you know about the Abbasids, they were the descendants of Al-Abbas, who was the uncle of the Prophet, but politically they aligned themselves against the descendants of Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein alayhi wasalam, and they sought rule, they sought political power for themselves. And so, to make a long story short, one of the ways that they did that was through character defamation. They had to come up with a story that the descendants of Imam Hassan and the descendants of Imam Hussein could not lead because they did not have the character to lead, or their ancestors did not have the character to lead. So one of those stories that they came up with was that Al-Imam Al-Hasan alayhi salam, as pure as he was and as genuine was that he was a habitual divorcer, that he would marry and divorce. And they came up with stories like one story, just as an example, and there are many of these, but one story is that one time he married a woman and she was at a distance, and he sent her her mahar, her dowry of 100,000 dirhams, and her divorce along with the dowry. So it was an instantaneous marriage and divorce. It was never consummated. Another story says that when his father, Imam Ali alayhi salam, died, when he was assassinated, one of the wives turned to him and she said, you know, congratulations on becoming the Imam after. And so he took offense to that, so he divorced her. And so I want to go a little bit into that story and speak about some of the women of Al-Imam Al-Hasan, how they entered his life. And through that you begin to see the character, the pure character of this man. And it really begins to bring into light the hadith of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. One narration says the following. It says that Abdullah ibn Abbas, who was one of the companions of the Prophet, he says, one day I was with the Prophet and we went to the home of Imam Ali and Fatima Zahra alayhi salam, and we knocked on the door and there was no reply. And so we sat there and we waited at the entrance. The Prophet didn't, even though it was the home of his daughter, but he didn't barge in. The proper akhlaq, the proper conduct, was to go inside and enter after you have permission, even if it's your family members. even if it's a friend. That's just proper Islamic etiquette, akhlaq. And so they're both sitting there, the Prophet is sitting there, Abdullah is sitting there. Al-Imam al-Hasan alayhi salam, who was very, very young, he was a child, he comes outside and the Prophet extends his arms and he falls into the lap of the Prophet. And the Prophet embraces him. And then he says that this, my son, and he used to refer to him as my son, not as my grandson, my son is a true Sayyid. What he meant by that, the word Sayyid in Arabic, the literal meaning of the word Sayyid is an exalted person. A person of high status. Not high position that if you're considered a Sayyid, you can boss other people around and tell them what to do. That's not what's meant by it. In fact, the narration of the Prophet says, Sayyidul Qawmi Khadimuhum, that the true Sayyid of the people, the true exalted person of the people, is their Khadim, the one that serves them. So it's not just positional leadership, it's servant leadership. So the true exalted person of a community is the one that's able to serve people. That's servant leadership. So the Prophet says, "Inna hadha ibni, this my son is a true Sayyid, and perhaps God will create reconciliation and peace between two nations by his will." That he will be the cause of bringing peace between two nations, between two groups of people. And you fast forward many, many years, and truly, Al-Imam al-Hasan alayhi salam, in his political life, becomes the cause of bringing peace between people. So that attitude and that spirit of reconciliation, bringing peace, you find that not just only on a political level, but in his personal life as well. The way that he dealt with his family members. So the reason I mentioned that verse in the beginning in Surah Al-Hujurat, and I'll give just a brief overview of that verse. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, in ja'akum fasiqun binaba'in, fatabayyanu an tusibu qawman bijahala, fatusbihu ala ma fa'altum nadimin. O you who believe, beware. Beware. That if someone comes to you, a devious person comes to you, and gives you news, gives you tidings, before accepting it, go and verify and make sure that what is being said is the truth. Because if you don't, and you act upon what is being said, فَتُصْبِحُ عَلَى مَا فَعَلْتُمْ نَادِمِينَ, you may regret your decision. You may do the wrong thing. How many times has it been, you know, in our life where someone gives us information that's wrong? Someone gives us faulty information. You know, this verse is speaking about fake news. When they talk about fake news, this was fake news. And the story behind this verse is that the Prophet Muhammad had sent somebody by the name of Al-Walid ibn Uqba to a tribe by the name of Bani al-Mustalaq. And Bani al-Mustalaq were a tribe that had accepted Islam. They had become Muslim. And they were sending their taxes to Medina, where the Prophet was. So they had already created peace, and they were sending their taxes, their dues, their zakat. So the Prophet sent Al-Walid ibn Uqba, and Al-Walid was from Banu Umayyah. He was actually a cousin of Uthman ibn Affan. And because Al-Walid, this man who the Prophet sent, he wasn't on very good terms with Bani al-Mustalaq before they became Muslim. He had some issues with them. So when he went out in order to bring the zakat, the taxes, to collect the taxes, they came out in order to receive him. They wanted to welcome him with open arms because he was the messenger of the Prophet. He was the messenger of Rasulullah. So because they came out in such a grand display, he thought that they were coming out to attack him. And so he was afraid. He ran back to the Prophet and he said, "Ya Rasulullah, they're mobilizing for war. We need to also mobilize for war." And so what was that? That was false information. That was fake news. And so the Prophet sends somebody else and he says, "Go and make sure, before we mobilize for war, go and make sure that what's what he says is it true or is it false? And that verse was revealed. Ya ayyuha alladhina amanu, O you who believe, make sure of the information that you're getting. And this is just practical advice. It doesn't apply to you only if you're a political ruler. You know, we have to, in our daily life, decide what type of information we're going to allow to affect our behavior. And some people, you find that they really have no standard of what is believable and what is acceptable. Anything that anybody tells them, they believe. You've seen some of those people. Maybe they're in your community, maybe they're in your family. Anything that anybody tells them, they believe. So that there's really no standard of acceptable information or not. And so it's the reason I say that is because when it comes to what we've learned through history, such as the case of Al-Imam al-Hasan al-Mujtaba, it's important to understand what is acceptable information and what is not. And when we come across the science of hadith, and the hadith are the sayings of the Prophet and the Imams of Ahlul Bayt, and we take our religion, our deen, how we understand our faith, our daily practices and rituals from the hadith. The scholars who study the chain of narration, they bring this verse into light. And they say, this is one of the verses that tells us that not every hadith is acceptable. You need to verify and make sure that this hadith was transmitted to us through authentic, believable means. Some people, unfortunately, were not very trustworthy. They were not authentic in what they spoke and how they relayed information. Just like today, some of us, we hear something. If the person is of not good character and integrity, then what's to guarantee that they're not going to twist that information to sound like something else? You know, when you're a child in the classroom, you play a game. If you ever played this game where you have a row of people that are sitting, and one person says something to the first person has to repeat it to the second person has to repeat it to the third, to the fourth, and by the time it gets to the fifth or sixth person, it's something completely different. And so one person in the middle can completely change and lie about what was said to them. So that same philosophy exists in our daily life. We have to really be careful of what we're listening to, especially today, my friends, when it comes to the media. Some people, they have... I was in a hotel lobby, and on one side, they had Fox News, and the other side, they had CNN. And they were talking about the same issue, but they were completely different. It was about the probe, the Mueller investigation. One channel was saying one thing, the other channel was saying the exact opposite thing. And I was looking at both of them thinking, the average person that's watching these TV channels, what's going on in their mind? Do they go out into the world and they want to think good things about people? And we ask ourselves why we're always assuming the worst things about people and people are assuming the worst things about us. It's because all of the information, all of the junk that we're taking in, and if it's not on the TV screen, it's on our phones. On Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and Snapchat, and it's become an invasion into our homes. And we can't tell what is true and what is not. There was a video recently that came up on YouTube, and it was about a man who did a social experiment, and his social experiment was that he faked being rich on Instagram for 1 week. And it shows how he would take pictures with a green screen behind him, and then they would Photoshop it and make it as if he was sitting in his own private jet and post it on Instagram. And the amount of followers that he got just because he was faking this rich life. And unfortunately, people, their emotions and everything that they believe and everything that they choose to do is based on what they see on Instagram. The way we compare ourselves to other people. Our self-image is affected by what we see on social media. So the verse is not just... The verse is telling us, have a standard of information. What is acceptable in your life and what is not acceptable in your life. You have to have a standard in your life. So I want to talk a little bit about the case of Al-Imam al-Hasan alayhi salam. And Wilfred Madelung, who wrote the book, The Succession to Muhammad, in one part of the book, towards the end, he writes about this specific topic. And he goes through and he does an in-depth research and reveals the names of the wives of Al-Imam Al-Hasan alayhi salam. And so when you come across the report, Al-Mada'ini says that the Imam married 70 wives or 90 wives or 200 wives and he divorced them, well, you realize that all of that is fake. It's not real. Because you can track down the number of wives that he had by name. And so just to give you a little overview, and I don't want to overwhelm you with these names, you don't have to memorize them or anything, but just as general knowledge, narrations tell us the following, and this is documented chronologically, so from beginning to end. One of the first wives of Al-Imam al-Hasan, her name was Salma. And Salma was the daughter of Imru'ul Qais. Imru'ul Qais was a Christian man who came to Medina from the Syrian desert, and he accepted Islam during the time of the second Khalifa. And he was a man of influence. And normally what would happen is that during the time of the Prophet, the Khulafa, and Imam Ali alayhi salam, when people would come to accept Islam and go back to their people, when influential leaders would come to accept Islam and go back to their people, normally what they would do is they would appoint them based on their character, based on their influence. The leader would appoint that leader, either the Prophet or the Caliph or the Imam, they would appoint that leader as a leader to their people to teach them Islam and to collect taxes on their behalf. So Imru'ul Qais was one of those people who had come to accept Islam. And before he went back, Imam Ali alayhi salam went to him. And he proposed to him that now that you have become a Muslim, now that you have accepted Islam, let us bring our families together. Let us establish closer ties between ourselves. And I just want to mention, you know, when we talk about marriage of the Prophet or marriages of the Imams or marriages of early historical figures, please take it with a grain of salt. Understand that our perception of marriage today is different than the perception of marriage before. I mentioned this the other night when I spoke about Umm Salama. You know, if you look at how marriage is perceived today, you know, of course, most people, even among Muslims, most people believe in monogamy. One man, one woman, that's it, end of story, there's nothing beyond that at all. And our perception of marriage has changed. If you study just the history of the United States, you can actually divide marriage into different perceptions based on different eras of time. So if you look at, for instance, before the Industrial Revolution, before the mid-1800s, when people would get married, it wasn't necessarily because they loved one another. It's because they just wanted to start a family. When you look at after the Industrial Revolution, people started to talk about love. Well, I'm marrying this person because I love this person. And then in the past few decades, it's more than just love. It's, you know, I want to grow with this person spiritually and mentally and emotionally and all of that. So it's something more than just love. And so our perception of marriage today is different than what marriage was 1400 years ago. Sometimes people before would get married to create tribal alliances between families, and there was nothing wrong with that. Today we look at it as, you know, kind of questionable, but back then there was absolutely nothing wrong with that. And so we have to ask ourselves the question, if I'm not comfortable with this, why am I not comfortable with this? Is it because of the perception that I have growing up, or is it because that's the truth? So Imam Ali tells Imru'ul Qais, he says, let us come together as tribes. And so Imru'ul Qais there gives three of his daughters in marriage. One to Imam Ali, one to Imam Hassan, and one to Imam Hussein. And so the one that he gave to Imam Ali, she bore for him a daughter who died in infancy. Salma, this one, was the wife of Al-Imam al-Hasan. And the wife of Al-Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam was Al-Rabab. And in one of the coming nights you'll learn about Al-Rabab. Al-Rabab bint Imru'ul Qais, who was the mother of Ali al-Azhar, the infant son of Imam Hussein. She was there in Karbala. She witnessed everything that took place. And she was a great, great, great woman. And Imam Hussein loved her very, very much. And in fact, he even spoke lines of poetry for her, Al-Rabab bint Imru'ul Qais, and her daughter, Sukaina, who was said to be his favorite daughter. So this was one of the wives of Imam al-Hassan alayhi salam. The second, so Salma was married in Medina. The second was Ju'da bint al-Ash'af. Now, Ju'da bint al-Ash'af, when the Imam married her, everything was okay, everything was gravy. But the family of Ju'da bint al-Ash'af, they were bad news. Her father, Al-Ash'ath bin Qais, was a man who, when it came to the conflict between Imam Ali and Muawiyah, he said, you know, I don't want to get involved, I don't want to take any sides. Now that wasn't the best course of action, but that's what he decided. He said, I don't want to take any sides. And then he had the daughter, Ju'da, and he had two sons, one who was Al-Qais ibn Al-Ash'ath and another one who was Muhammad ibn Al-Ash'ath. One of them arrested Muslim ibn Aqil, and brought him to Ubaidullah ibn Ziyad. And Muslim ibn Aqil was the representative of Imam Hussein in Kufa. And the other one was in Karbala and fought against Imam Hussein alayhi salam. So that family was, they were bad news. But none of those signs really appeared when Imam al-Hassan married Ju'da. And Ju'da, they say, was the one who actually poisoned him and caused his death. But the story was very interesting because it says that her father invited Imam al-Hassan for a meal to the home, and he came to him, and after they ate, they drank. It was customary. And the Quran tells us, فَكُلِي وَشْرَبِي, right? To eat first and then to drink. And narrations tell us, in fact, from a health perspective, it's healthier to first eat your food and then to drink water or drink whatever you're drinking. I don't know exactly how that works, but it's supposed to be a healthier way. And so people would eat food and then they would drink. So after they were done eating, he called his daughter Ju'da to serve the water to Imam al-Hassan. And so he saw her, and Al-Ash'ath bin Qais said to him, he said, you are being served by a young lady who has never been in front of any other man, who has never seen any other man. And Imam al-Hassan, it shows you how good of a heart he had, how pure of a heart he had, that even though her father may have not taken any sides, but he had a very, very good heart. And really in life, you can't tell everything that's going to happen in the future. Some people ask me before they get married, how do I make sure that I'm marrying the right person? Well, there are certain signs, but you're never going to tell 100%. Because people can change. One day a person has a good attitude, they're friendly, they're doing all the right things, they're saying all the right things, and then one day they lose their mind and they change, or something happens in their life and they change. I was reading something yesterday and it was very beautiful. There's a prolific author, his name is Norman Vincent Peale, and he said, ask the God who created you to constantly recreate you. God who created us, ask him to recreate you, because sometimes we stay stagnant, and when we stay stagnant we don't grow, we recede, we begin to fall back. So people can change after a while. So this was his second wife, Ju'da. The third was a woman by the name of Bashir. And by the way, some of these narrations don't tell us if Imam al-Hassan divorced them or not. So there's a list of seven wives, but we know that Imam Hassan was not married to all of them simultaneously. Not all of them at the same time, because he can only be married to four at the same time. So the third was Bashir, and her father was an influential man who became a governor in Kufa. And the fourth was in Medina, after he left Kufa, because first Imam al-Hassan was in Medina, then he went to Kufa with his father, and then he left Kufa and went back to Medina. So the fourth one was Khawla bint Mansur. And Khawla bint Mansur was already married before, and she was divorced. So technically she didn't need her father's permission to remarry. So when she married Imam al-Hassan alayhi salam, it was not with the permission of her father, but really she did not need the permission of her father. So her father came to Medina, the narration says, and he planted a flag in the mosque of the Prophet, and he called his tribe. And he was kind of upset that, why didn't people consult me for marrying my daughter off to Al-Hassan? And so people turned to him and they said, don't you know what the Prophet has said about this man? Why are you worried? Why are you concerned? Al-Hassan wal-Hussein Sayyidi Shababi Ahlil Jannah. They are the masters of the youth of paradise. Are you afraid that he's going to do wrong to your daughter? He said, no, you know, I just, you know, sometimes people, they just want to feel significant. The best way to treat people is just make them feel significant, make them feel important, tell them that you love them, right? And so, so he takes her, the father, he comes and he takes his daughter and he goes to Quba. For those of you who have visited Medina, Quba is outside of Medina on the way to Mecca. And he says to his daughter that if Al-Hasan really wants you, he's going to come after you. He's going to come and get you. And that's exactly what he did. He took with him his brother, Al-Husayn alayhi salam, he took Abdullah ibn Abbas, he took the influential people of the Banu Hashim and they went and they brought her back as a sign of respect to the father, even though they didn't really need his permission in the first place. Again, it shows you the heart of Al-Imam Al-Hasan alayhi salam, that even if people did him wrong, he wasn't going to do them wrong. He was going to give them what they wanted. He was a man of reconciliation. He was a man of peace, and really to be a person of peace, a man of peace, a woman of peace, to give peace to other people, we have to be at peace with ourselves. Sometimes we're not at peace with ourselves. Sometimes there's unresolved conflict. Sometimes we feel guilty, or we haven't forgiven ourselves for wrong things that we've done in the past that we can't change. And so we're never at peace, and so you can never give someone peace if you're not at peace yourself. So that was the character of Al-Imam Al-Hasan alayhi salam. So that fourth one was Khawla bint Mansur. The fifth one, her name was Hafsa, and she was a granddaughter of the first Khalifa, Abu Bakr. Now, as I was reading this, I have to be honest, I was very conflicted whether I even wanted to talk about this or not. And the reason why is because the narrations tell us that she was a good woman, and that Al-Imam Al-Hasan actually, he really, really loved her. But there was another man who thought that he was going to marry her. And so when he didn't get to marry her, he began to say bad things about her in public that were not true at all. He began to defame her character and her honor. And none of this was true. But Al-Imam Al-Hasan saw that this person, he was a man of wisdom. You know, sometimes you notice vile or nasty behavior from people. And you could tell that person, the reason why they're engaging in that behavior is because they're hurting. There's something on the inside that hurts. You know, there's a saying, it says that hurt people hurt people. People who they themselves are hurt, what do? They begin to hurt other people. So Al-Imam Al-Hasan noticed this. And so he gave her up and he divorced her so that there would be no problems. Until that man who had started to make that trouble, he went and he married her. So Al-Imam Al-Hasan, again, this shows you, even though today you look at it and you think, oh my God, you know, and even some people at the time of the Imam who were of his followers, they thought that he was naive for behaving in this way. But he wasn't naive. He was a man of wisdom. He was a man of reconciliation. He didn't want any problems with anyone. So that was the story of Hafsa, and of course there was it was a long story behind that. You know, it's not easy also to be a giver. Sometimes when you're a giver, people become skeptical of you. I have a friend who was telling me, he said that one day they had gone to Disneyland and they had extra tickets. What are you going to do with extra tickets? So he said, we stood at the door and I began to give away extra tickets to people, free tickets. I began to walk up to people, instead of them buying a $100 ticket, I don't know how much it costs now, 120. Every year they make it more expensive in Disneyland. He said, I began to hand it away. He said, people weren't taking it from me because they were skeptical. Why is someone giving me something for free? I don't want it for free. So it's so interesting because giving is looked upon sometimes in a skeptical light. People don't trust you if you want to give them something. They think, okay, why me? Why are you giving me something? Oh, you definitely have an agenda. You want to take advantage of me. And my friend was saying, all I was trying to do was get rid of these godforsaken things. I don't want them anymore. I want to go in the park and enjoy with my family. So Al-Imam Al-Hasan was that kind of a giver. That he gave. He didn't want to hold back from anyone. He didn't want people to say that this person held something back away from me. That was the kind of character he had. Another wife that's mentioned in history is Ishaq ibn Talha. And he used to always say good things about this wife, that she was a woman of good character. He was very, very satisfied with her. Oh, by the way, I forgot. Just one thing that I forgot that I wanted to mention. The wife that we mentioned Khawla bint Mansur, the one who initially did not have the father's approval, she was the mother of Al-Hasan al-Muthanna. Al-Hasan al-Muthanna was the only surviving son of Al-Imam al-Hasan alayhi salam. If you've heard the story of Karbala, all of the sons of Imam Hassan were killed except for Al-Hasan al-Muthanna. His name was also Al-Hasan, so Al-Hasan ibn al-Hasan. He was injured in battle, but he wasn't killed. He was saved, he was taken back to Medina, and he lived his life as a pious scholar. And so today, all of the Sayyids around the entire world, which number in the hundreds of thousands, if not millions, that are the descendants of Al-Imam al-Hasan, come from this son, Al-Hasan al-Muthanna, whose mother was Khawla. So to think about it, if the Imam had not gone after, if he had not gone after the wife, what would have happened? An entire generation of people would not have existed. So the moral of the story is, if you want something out of life, you know, you got to fight for it, even if you see some opposition. So going back to Ishaq, she was also a virtuous wife. And the seventh was one that was known as Hind, and she was the daughter of Suhail ibn Amr. So why I bring this up is because, number one, it shows us that they weren't 70 or 90 or 200 that he had married and divorced. They could be narrowed down to a handful, number one. And number two, it shows you the character and the spirit that Al-Imam al-Hasan had, alayhi salam, of reconciliation. That he wanted to achieve peace. He didn't like conflict in the home. He didn't want people to fight in front of him. He was a strong man. He was a convicted man. But he was a man of peace. And in order to be a man of peace or a woman of peace, we have to be at peace with ourselves. And so these narrations that show him as a habitual divorcer, they're the exact opposite of what his character was. A person who marries and divorces 70 or 90 or 200 times, that's a person who wants everything in this world, who's a taker. He was the exact opposite of a taker. He was a giver. He was a person who gave everything that he had. You know, narrations would say that when people in Kufa, the poor people of Kufa, would go to Imam Ali alayhi salam, they would go to his door, he would give them charity, and then he would direct them to the home of his son, Al-Imam al-Hasan, because he knew that Al-Imam al-Hasan, his son, was also a giver. So, and Al-Hasan alayhi salam, he didn't say that, well, you already went to my father's house. You know, how many times, if someone comes to receive from us, we're very conditional with that, right? And so he was a person of unconditional giving. He was a person of unconditional love. That was the true character. That was the true nature of the Imam. So when we celebrate his birth, and when we congratulate on his birth, it's not just the introduction of blessings into this world, because that was what his birth truly was. It was an introduction of blessing into this world. The first birth of the most purest union of all, and that was the union and the marriage of Imam Ali and Fatima al-Zahra alayhimus salam. And he was the firstborn of that. So imagine the blessings that came to this earth, that came into this universe by his birth. But not only do we celebrate that, but we celebrate the peace-giving nature of Al-Imam al-Hasan, the loving nature and the attitude and the spirit that he had. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in this holy month to endow us with a spirit of forgiveness, with a spirit of love, with a spirit of compassion and respect and honor for one another. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to forgive us in this holy month. We have just a few days left to think that half of the month is already done. Of course, Thursday night will be the first night of Laylatul Qadr, and then Saturday night and Monday night, inshallah. So please prepare yourself for those nights, prepare your hearts, and remember all of those who are in need. Allahumma khfir lil mu'minina wal mu'minat wal muslimina wal muslimat al ahya'i minhum wal amwat. Tabi' baynana wa baynahum bil khayrat. Innaka mujibud da'wat. Innaka qadhi al hajat. Innaka ala kulli shay'in qadir. Bi rahmatika ya arhamar rahimin. Wa sallallahu wa sallama ala sayyidina Muhammad wa ala ahli baytihi at-tayyibin at-tahirin.